Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we continue to help with the Learn, Pray, Act, because that's what we're doing here. And technically, folks, the whole point of this show and our effort is to help you understand the importance of standing up for demanding full compliance of the Constitution. Now, today being the day before Thanksgiving, I always do the same content every year. And every year I try to set up, and I don't do a good job of haranguing and giving you the repetitive, don't forget to do this, and we're doing this, and I just, I don't do good at that. I don't think many people, you know, we're adults. All I should actually have to do is tell you, hey, we need to do this, or, you know, here's my recommendation, and leave it, let it go like that. But I know some people need reminders, and we, you know, that's why we get married. That's why, you know, wives need husbands and husbands need wives. We have to remind each other. So, welcome back. And actually, this is going to be different today, folks, because I have never done this with anybody else. And now that we have Tammy and we have Sean, what I'd like to do is kind of, I've given them the content of what to read and some of the, you know, the verbiage that I used every year, so that they can kind of read it and we can kind of discuss it. Granted, we only have an hour, so we need to dive into this, because we would be remiss if we didn't get through Washington's proclamation of the very first Thanksgiving of the nation. So that all being said, we all have the basic guideline or the document that I call Thanksgiving in America. And we talk about the Puritan Thanksgiving or the Pilgrims, and then we're going to talk about the actual first Thanksgiving of America, and then we're going to talk about the actual first Thanksgiving under the Constitution of the United States of America. So, what I'd like to do, and kind of looking at this, they're kind of pretty similar, but as far as depth and length. And so let me ask Tammy, because I think having the Puritan Thanksgiving up first, and it's the longer one, everybody kind of knows the history, so Sean can kind of jump ahead and read a little bit or read ahead on the first American Thanksgiving, so that while Tammy's kind of going through this this recount, excuse me, or this encapsulation of the first or the Puritan Thanksgiving, we can kind of have an open discussion of Thanksgiving. Does that make sense? So before we dive into this, mm-hmm. Let me start off with this, folks. Thanksgivings were common. People wore, you know, belts to hold up their trousers. And in their day, they had slaves for labor. I mean, there were just these common things in norm. As a matter of fact, these good righteous people that didn't have slaves, most of them didn't have slaves, and these good righteous people, when they built their home, they blessed it to be a sanctuary for, because they were strong Christians, to be a sanctuary for the Spirit of Christ. You know, they basically blessed all of their buildings. If you actually go through the history, every public building that was erected, even after the Constitution, they were being blessed. Did you know that? They were actually using, I believe, olive branches and oil and so forth in blessing a footing and or a corner foundation or what have you. That's how focused and how serious they were about consecrating their efforts to God. So when the people were coming to America as a charter or coming here, you know, to create an effort, a business, an idea, Many people that came to America came as indentured servants so that they could just get their own property and live life, you know, in on their own terms. There were other groups that were companies and other, you know, people that voyaged. They paid for their own charter to come over and establish a community. The Puritans did this. There were many groups that did this. Those groups that did that, it was very common that once they made it to America, the first thing they did was they got on their knees on the ground and blessed and kissed the ground and said, you know, thank you, Lord, we survived the trip. Because back in those days, people died pretty easily. As a matter of fact, I believe Lloyd's of London was created just before this time to help underwrite people and protect, you know, underwriting people's lives as they went onto these travels so that their family would be taken care of if something happened to them. Anyway, believe it or not, that was kind of common for the very affluent people traveling around the world. That's why Lloyd's of London was created. Anywho, as we look at this phenomenon, the first true repeated phenomena is what Sean is going to cover in the second one. We as a nation decided, or somewhere, somehow, I had no idea where the Council of Nye was, but obviously there was this, you know, a bunch of manipulators. How can we manipulate American culture by, you know, selecting for them what Thanksgiving we're going to celebrate? Because out of all of them, they chose one that we could gravitate towards gluttony and sin. Isn't it interesting how we, you know, the one that they chose has become a literally a day of sin?
Now, never thought about it like that, but
right, but you know, and I know that everybody listening, I'm insulting you if you think I'm saying that you're sinning. No, but we have created the excuse for everybody to immerse themselves in overeating and overindulging in entertainment from nonstop parades, nonstop football games, and so forth. It is literally a day to enjoy to immerse oneself in their own carnal pleasures. Therefore,
we spend it with family.
Yes. Well, I know that. There are good people that do that. But we're the society, we have created this very desirous day to go enjoy yourself. Don't worry about it. So with that, Tammy, why don't you go ahead and read this little dialogue. I read this every year, but I'll let you read it this year. And as she reads it, we can figure out, you know, these points, and we can talk about this as we kind of look at this perspective on the Puritans' Thanksgiving. Go ahead.
Okay. The Pilgrims who celebrated Thanksgiving in America were fleeing religious persecution in England. In 1609, a group of pilgrims left England for the religious freedom in Holland, where they lived and prospered. After a few years, their children were speaking Dutch and had become attached to the Dutch way of life. This worried the pilgrims. They considered the Dutch frivolous and their ideas a threat to their children's education and morality. So that's where I have a question. What did they consider a threat?
So the Dutch were pagans. So the Dutch were really pagans. They weren't They weren't good Christians. They were have you ever heard of Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Do you know what life is like in Amsterdam? And I mean, it's a Babylon. It's a place of legal prostitution and drugs. And I mean, so they were a very free society. The reason the Puritans went there is because the Dutch were okay with anybody coming. Sure, come on.
So they decided to leave Holland to travel to the New World. Their trip was financed by a group of English investors, the merchant and adventurers. It was agreed that the pilgrims would be given passage and supplies in exchange for their working for their backers for 7 years. On September 6th, 1620, the pilgrims set sail for the New World on a ship called the Mayflower. They sailed from Plymouth, England, and aboard were 44 pilgrims who called themselves the saints, and 66 others whom the pilgrims called the strangers. The trip was cold and damp and took 65 days. Since there was the danger of fire on the wooden ship, the food had to be eaten cold. Many passengers became sick, and one person died by the time the land was sighted on November 10th. Only one? That's pretty good. The long trip led to many disagreements between the saints and the strangers. After land was sighted, a meeting was held, and an agreement was worked out called the Mayflower Compact, which guaranteed equality and unified the two groups. They joined together and named themselves the Pilgrims. Although they had first sighted land off Cape Cod, they did not settle until they arrived at Plymouth, which had been named by Captain John Smith in 1614. It was there that the Pilgrims decided to settle. Plymouth offered an excellent harbor. A large brook offered a resource for fish. The Pilgrims' biggest concern was attack by the local Native American Indians. But the Pactuxets, I don't know how to say that, were a peaceful group and did not prove to be a threat.
Okay, so this is the history of how they got there. I think everybody understands that over the course of the next two seasons, see, they didn't have a chance to plant anything. So they kind of had to really struggle that very first winter without. And I think this is one of the reasons why they, you know, learned to do some fishing and foraging and that type of stuff just to survive in the area. So after that very first winter, they then executed this plan of communalism, where they were basically all going to share the labor of all for all. In other words, it was socialism. And over the course of that next winter, we actually towards the harvest is where this concept, the tragedy of the commons, occurred, where those people in the middle of the night that felt they knew how much food was out there, that's not going to be enough for us. So they went out and took, you know, they harvested early so that they made sure that they had more than everybody else so that they would survive. Now, that became the tragedy of the commons. And over the next course of the next winter, those people that didn't get any, those people who actually had some, should have been actually outed to say, hey, you're the ones that stole this stuff. But whether that happened or not, that's, you know, that's not in the records that I have. But bottom line is that they ended up recognizing that their folly in setting up this socialistic system created the Thanksgiving that we celebrate today, where everybody has brought their own harvest together in a basically a feast of plenty and giving thanks, you know, that they finally have a system that serves them. So in other words, it wasn't really setting aside the land for the king and God and that type of thing, and it wasn't necessarily a time of sanctifying. It was a time of, you know, feasting and being happy with, you know, the bounty that they were blessed with. A big difference from some of these other Thanksgivings, and the next one is actually the first Thanksgiving, which, anybody got comments on the Puritan or anything you want to bring up? No? Okay. So,
not at this time.
So this is where, Sean, then, if you would, go ahead and read the first American Thanksgiving. Go ahead.
The first American Thanksgiving. Captain John Woodleaf conducts the first American Thanksgiving upon safe arrival in Virginia. Contrary to popular belief, the first American Thanksgiving was in Virginia, not Plymouth, Massachusetts. On December 4, 1619, after 10 weeks at sea, 38 English settlers arrived at Berkeley Hundred, about 20 miles upstream from Jamestown. On that day, Captain John Woodleaf held the first service of Thanksgiving as the newly landed settlers fell to their knees to thank God for their safe arrival. The Charter of Berkeley Hundred stated, "We ordain that the day of our ship's arrival at the place assigned for Planticon in the land of Virginia shall be yearly and perpetually kept holy as a day of thanksgiving to Almighty God." Thus, the first real the real first American Thanksgiving was held a year before the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and 2 years before the fabled New England feast. Historians say the feast at Berkeley Hundred may have included bacon, peas, cornmeal cakes, and cinnamon water. But regardless of the menu, to these settlers, the first Thanksgiving was much more than turkey and pumpkin pie. It was all about prayer. After several years, the site became Berkeley Plantation and was the long traditional home of the Harrison family, one of the first families of Virginia. Berkeley Plantation was the birthplace of William Henry Harrison, 9th U.S. President, and Benjamin Harrison, the 5th, signer of the Declaration of Independence. It is also the ancestral home of Benjamin Harrison, the 23rd U.S. President.
Okay, so there's a lot of history. And actually, I hope it didn't you didn't overlook the fact that they went upstream from Jamestown. I mean, so as these seagoing ships were, you know, crossing the Atlantic, they were capable of actually navigating up these rivers, and that's exactly what they did, because Jamestown was along a river. And so they went up the river from Jamestown and basically dumped these folks off in this new area. They arrived at Berkeley Hundred. Now, this was not the only. Like I said, this was really a tradition. This was probably one of the only traditions that was well documented enough that historians found it. You know, how many times have you and your community done something as a tradition for years and years and years, and you never documented it, and finally you just stopped doing it, and now nobody even knows about it? Families do this, communities do this, it's just common. Every once in a while, we actually have people in our midst that we would call them historians that would say, you know what, we need to kind of document this so that those, you know, our children, our children's children, and on and on and on, know what we did. So we want to record this. So based on the fact that somebody, and as a matter of fact, it's clear they're even pointing out that this was an act that they did when they landed. Right? That's what they said. The first thing they did was they went out there, and the word you said, planticon, that's actually plantation. the way they spelt and all of that, it throws everybody off, but that's okay. The point is that these people were so thankful that the divine hand of providence protected them in their travels to give them this land. And they were very serious. I mean, this was not something that they did lightly. As a matter of fact, it was so impressed upon them that they did it every year, and that somebody in their midst said, hey, not only are we impressed to do this, we need to record this. Because a historian or somebody looking through artifacts found these documents to say, hey, here's actually a Thanksgiving that was done that was not really based upon, you know, the survival of socialism and converting towards a very prosperous and bountiful community or what have you, and feasting. It was really always more of a humble thanks and of giving service. Today, and, you know, this is where I think the conversation needs to really turn. When we look at today, who among us, Sean, I mean, I'll let you start off, you know, how many times do we actually hear people with sincere desire to say, America needs another awakening, America needs, you know, blah, we need to become spiritual again, we need to turn our backs on our sins, we need to pray for forgiveness, all these types of things, right? Is that not true?
It's absolutely true. And I feel very strongly that that's where things went bad and how we've... Everything's escalated. I mean, we talk about how when they took prayer out of schools and started this whole separation of church and state fallacy, that's when everything just started ramping towards destruction.
Right. And so when we look at the pageant of Thanksgiving that's being hosted in the schools across America, it's become godless. And it's really been focused on, you know, again, the carnal sins of gluttony, right? One of the seven deadly sins. So it has been my desire for several years. That's why, if you go through my archives on Thanksgiving every year, I go through this. We not only play it today, folks, but we're rebroadcasting this tomorrow. So if you'd be so inclined and maybe so moved that you might even have prayer, you know, with your family before the airing of the show to say, let's consider something different next year. Let's literally try to break, you know, this tie. I don't want to deprive anybody of a good buzz. You know, you like to have a little bit of imbibed or you want to have, you know, the tryptophan trip of, you know, napping in the afternoon. You can still do that. Do it Friday. But take Thursday and serve the Lord. Take Thursday and sanctify the Constitution and give him thanks for this as we come together as a nation giving thanks. That's the whole... So I don't want to be swimming in the pool here. So Tammy, it has been one of those things that I've kind of talk a lot about this Thanksgiving and so forth. But I believe that when we really look at what we're doing as a nation. And we look at all of the holidays. Tell me what is the most sacred holiday as a nation that we truly recognize? Because I'm going to throw it up here right now that Christmas is not our most sacred holiday. We have taken a pagan holiday and made it sacred. But I'm saying the true intent behind the holiday itself, the most sacred intent that we as a nation come together, what would that one most sacred holiday be? Is it Labor Day? Is it the 4th of July?
Independence Day?
It was the 4th of July, Independence Day. Well, that's where we celebrate. But think about what we do for this Thanksgiving. So we haven't read, and if you haven't read it, then you're not attuned to the significance of the very first Thanksgiving. Because reading George Washington's proclamation and what he asked the nation to do, to me, is the differentiator between, you know, all other holidays. This day was called upon by a unified Congress, and the president willingly basically called upon the nation to set aside a day to serve him. So the intent of the Thanksgiving that the first nation recognized and came together on, to me, is there anything more spiritual than sanctifying the
service?
Absolutely. So when we look at how do we sanctify a blessing we receive, it's by actually sacrificing, doing without, and giving to others, you know, those things that we sacrificed, you know, by not eating, by giving a fast offering, or by, you know, by going out and helping people, you know, laboring to help those who need help. I mean, shoot, I'm a person that needs help. I can't do everything.
What do you guys do on Thanksgiving, Jer?
So what do we do? So we stopped doing the large Thanksgiving feasts and focusing on Thanksgiving, I'm doing the air quotes here, years ago. Probably, so I'll take that back. My mother, when we moved up here, my mother, she was a widow, and she maintained her Thanksgiving feast. So when we came up here, we weren't going to deprive her of that. But we, you know, said, Mom, we don't do that. And so we kind of went downscaled, and we just have kind of a big meal. But we actually do give thanks. And so we're going into break. So I will finalize my response to that as we come back. But for the most part, I spend Thanksgiving almost Monday through Friday and even on Sundays every day of the week. But we'll be right back after this, folks, so please stay tuned.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what does GR do for Thanksgiving? So for the most part, I work. I kind of do this work, and I do this work almost every day of the week. For the weekends and Saturdays and Sundays, I really try to focus that on family, but I still do this work because I believe the work I'm doing is for him. I believe this is his work. I believe that as we work on the cause of liberty and preserving and restoring and bringing back our liberty and taking back our government, I believe that's his work because his plan is dependent upon liberty. We are coming to a point where we may actually have a government that will save us. In other words, they will take credit because Obama almost did this, because Obama believed in collective salvation, that the government itself was going to save everybody. I believe that that was only a precursor to the government that's going to come. And if we don't fight and take a stand and demand that we do these things on our own and have control over our government, then we will rue that day. So I've kind of focused, and basically you could say I've sanctified my life in doing this work. So in other words, I'm kind of like, you know, a martyr or whatever you want to call it. But bottom line, on Thanksgiving, we just have a humble meal. We don't go out of our way of doing all the dressings. We usually will meet with other family members who aren't necessarily inclined to set aside the day to serve, and or friends and what have you, and we'll share leftovers of their feast or what have you. But for the most part, I mean, we don't watch TV. We don't watch the games. We just kind of take it. It's like a day of rest. It's kind of like a Sabbath for us, for the most part. I mean, you know, we can do what we can do, and you know, you can't force your spouse. You can't force your children. Well, you can as long as they're little, right? I mean, when I say force, I'm not talking about heavy coercion and the rack and torture. But, you know, we can actually say, hey, we're going to go out. We're going to get dressed. We're going to put our, you know, work clothes on. And we're going to go over to these neighbors. And we're going to rake up leaves. And we're going to mend somebody's fence. And we're going to do this. And we're going to do that. And then we're going to come home. And then we're going to have a simple meal. And we're going to be thankful for the opportunity that we had to go and serve others in this great nation. And then the next day, you can actually then have, you know, the feast of the harvest. You know, you can, you know, kind of enjoy, you know, the fruits of your labor in addition to that as that annual harvest feast. You know, here's an interesting thing. In the Bible, there was this, and I think you'll find this maybe in Hebrew, where it talks about Melchizedek giving... actually, was it Melchizedek? No, it was Abraham who basically paid tithes. And Abraham paid his tithes in the fall. I mean, so when the Lord finally got the sacrifices from his children, it was always this time of year. Why? Because people didn't have accounting that went 24/7. You know, you produced, and at the end of the harvest, because it was agrarian society back then. Very few people were producing, you know, with metals and so forth. And by the time winter came along, production just stopped because mobility and everything else stops in America or these places. But my point is this, is that the common time when people did enjoy their own harvests were at the end of that labor. When we kind of look at, you know, the celebration of the freeing of Israel and having the fatted lamb and the sacrifice and the similitude of the son, that was done with Passover, which was more of the springtime. And so society, you know, had these two points, or I should say Christendom and society, God's society, you know, had these two kinds of points. There was both a sacredness in the autumn time frame or the harvest time frame, because that's when people gave of their one-tenth. And I believe it was stated that Abraham not only paid 10%, he paid a full 10% even on his spoils. In other words, if he had 100 acres and 10 acres were destroyed because of a flood, he still paid a full 10 acres on his tithes to the Lord. Which means that, you know, when the Lord said, give me 10, he gave him 10 of what his potential was, not on what his harvest was. Which was, you know, I guess that was the point in bringing that out, is that he was a man of that character. And so I think that we as people should aspire to be people of that character. But when we really look in this religious or this type of society that we have, we do have these 2 months, or I should say these two sides of the year, where in the springtime it was the Passover, it was the atonement and the resurrection, and then in the fall we have this thing called the harvest and our ultimate sacrifice. Because folks, how many of you pay your tithe where you're literally giving up this bulk mass of wealth, you know, one-tenth of your earnings for the year? That's a big check to write. And the fact in those days they did it without question, to me, you know, sets the, you know, where we are as a nation today. Because I think when we look at, you know, the churches themselves and how they struggle because people aren't contributing, we're not doing things, we're not sacrificing. We need to become that nation again of sacrifice. And we have to start recognizing before it's too late that Constitution gives us the ability to do that and to turn things around. So to answer that question, hopefully that answered it. Probably was more information than anybody cared. But at this point, let me do this, because this is what the first Thanksgiving truly was. And I said this, that Congress, on their own accord, unanimously agreed that the nation needed to be called into a giving of thanks. In other words, call upon the nation to join together to give thanks to their Creator who gave them this Constitution and this nation. It went to George Washington, and he responded in kind. And so this is his proclamation. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and to humbly implore His protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts and many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially for affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all that is good, that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind and care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty, which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means which we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us. And also, that we may unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise and just and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best, given under my hand at the city of New York the third day of October. And that was his message that went to the nation. So here's the test. What was he really asking us to do in this proclamation? What were we supposed to do on the 26th?
Serve God and thank him.
Right. So you'll find that right there. Go ahead, Tammy. Go ahead.
All right. Well, he says to devote it to a day of public thanksgiving and prayer.
And right. And service. Right. Because right there, he says, now, therefore, I do recommend and assign on this day, the 26th of November, next, to be devoted by the people of the states to the service of that great, glorious being. So let me stop right there. How can we serve him?
Bearing serving fruit. Others.
What's that? First, Sean,
and then fruit amongst our neighbors.
Okay, sharing our fruit and of giving of ourselves, giving, you know.
No, not sharing fruit, bearing fruit.
Oh, bearing fruit. Okay, that's fine. Right. That's fine as well. So how would one bear fruit?
By serving them. Testimony and bringing the gospel to people.
Okay, as well as in some ways, service itself. In other words, being in their employ to lighten their burdens and helping them, because is not working and or serving others. I mean, when we look at the different examples of Christ, didn't he wash the feet of his apostles? Didn't he wash the feet of others?
That's what I was going to say. And he said, you will know my disciples by their love for one another. And right. If you go out and serve someone and give your time and your whatever you have to help them, then you're loving your neighbor.
Yeah, there's that. I think there's also that scripture that says, when you've done it to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me, right? So in other words, when he says the least of these, he's not talking about going and, you know, trying to make favor with the rich guy down the street. He's talking about actually helping the widows, the people that are destitute, the people that are, you know, poor. When you've done it to the least of these, to help the poor, to help those who can't really help themselves. You know, just think what America would be like if we actually started serving each other. If we actually started...
Well, I think what we're like now, just from the undertone of that.
Yes.
I mean, I know a lot of people who have never gone anywhere else, and they seem to take for granted what we have.
Yeah.
And it's very much worthy of being thankful for the opportunities and the just the state of our country. Even though we're on the brink of destruction, we still have more rights than most people and prosperity than most people around the world.
And we have more hope than they do, because we have a constitution that empowers us to take our government back.
Tammy, I wanted to mention something about that, where he says, for the peaceful and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted. So right there is a nod to the county and state constitutions leading to the federal constitution or national constitution.
Yes. Yes. So, Tammy, you're going to say something good, so go ahead.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I don't know.
We were talking about how do we serve him. So how do we serve
him? Oh, I just said by serving others. That's all I said, yeah.
Okay. And so in some ways, some of that could be, you know, making dinner. Feeding them.
Or simply just visiting people.
I mean, visiting as well, but there are people that are starving. There are people that are in deep need. You know, and there are people actually in deep moral need, and that's why, you know, when Sean said, you know, giving them the word. Sometimes the way to open their heart is by humbly serving them in labor first and then providing them with the reasons why we do this. We do this not that we might be blessed, but that they might be blessed to soften their heart and open it unto him.
Yes, sir. I think that's the greatest example that you can give people. I know it makes me think about this group called 8 Days of Hope. I don't know if you've heard of them. They go around after disasters, tornadoes, floods, hurricanes, and they help people rebuild their houses. And they just have volunteers that are Christian, and they go out and they voluntarily help these people, and they pray with them. And
okay.
The stories that people tell after they've experienced that they lost everything, and these people didn't have any reason or motivation other than their wanting to serve people, that they came and helped them. And I was going to say, if you know, like, older people who don't have any family that come and visit them, I mean, you can just change their whole mentality, and if you just go spend some time with them.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, 9 times out of 10, these are probably the biggest points in our lives where we grow unimaginably. It's usually during the most austere times where, you know, we have to actually either do without, you know, and or where we give of ourselves. You know, how many people have heard that the best way to forget about your problems is to immerse yourself in helping others with theirs?
There you go.
And so
yeah, 100%.
All of these things are true. I mean, so it's not, there's no contention at all in this discussion. I can't understand why this idea of trying to celebrate the true meaning of Thanksgiving. I mean, there are people that try to celebrate the true meaning of Christmas or try to really center it on Christ and not, you know, the commercial things and so forth. Why not actually look at the one thing that this nation actually did on its own in an absolute spiritual capacity, Anybody that says that this nation was not a Christian nation has no idea about this particular holiday. They've never been taught this. And that right there, my friends, leads us to see why we have been led to celebrate the Puritan holiday and not the true holiday or the true intent of what this nation did in its first Thanksgiving. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. And I did a little research on that just to back you up. And it talks about how in the 19th and 20th century, promotion of the Pilgrim Thanksgiving in schools was emphasized. It's a foundational original myth of American values, cooperation, hard work, and religious freedom. It's also a symbolic moment of harmony and moral and cultural instruction.
Yeah, so in a way, they started going down this path because the Puritans had, you know, this good Christian feel-good story. But over time, it's all been edited. Over time, it's actually been replaced with something completely different, something that's literally become the holiday of gluttony and entertainment and self-immersion. And so we have a choice. We have a choice to, you know, continue following the path that they're building us to go and, you know, and to basically jump off the cliff. Or we have an opportunity to actually try to restore those principles, those things, those actual, you know, actions that our framers and our forefathers who started this nation off with, we could actually follow in their footsteps. This is the beautiful thing about historians that actually wrote things down so that we could actually take a look at it and go, you know, what should we do? What do we do? And this answers that question very succinctly. We should actually set aside that Thanksgiving or this coming Thanksgiving as a day of service. We should actually start recognizing that, you know, we're contributing to the problem by ignoring and not sanctifying our Constitution. If you think about it, they centered and thanked him for that Constitution, for this federal Constitution. By us doing that, we're sanctifying it as well. At the beginning of every show, what do I always say? It's about centering our focus on demanding full compliance of the Constitution. So in other words, it's just another way of centering our focus on the Constitution. In other words, it's basically the same thing, taking a day of Thanksgiving and actually focusing on serving them and helping. Why are you here? Why are you serving us? What's causing you to do this on the day of football? You know, the day of turkey and feasts and fun. Because we still have a Constitution. Our forefathers, you know, the very first Thanksgiving recognized the Constitution and served each other. And we want to restore that concept of sanctifying the Constitution by serving each other. I don't know where this nation will go, but I believe that these are the types of steps that if this nation actually starts taking, it will change the direction and actually probably pull us back off the precipice from our own demise. Any other comments? Or, you know, we've got 4 minutes. So by all means,
I was going to say that I know it's hard because I'm thinking about it while we're talking about it. And we've definitely made some decisions to change the way that we do things, especially when it comes to Christmas and Christ versus the commercialism. Uh-huh. And I know it's hard for people to say, oh, well, I'm going to change it. You know, and the whole family, they might not be in the same mindset that you're in, but you can start small, maybe read Washington Proclamation, talk about what Thanksgiving is really supposed to be about, and plant those seeds
right
with your relatives and your family and friends that you spend with on Thanksgiving.
There you go.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start I'm going to start reading this.
Okay, so folks, see what happens when you read a little bit. See, let's put you to the test. Next year is going to be another Thanksgiving, and there's going to be a lot of water that's going to traverse underneath these bridges of life. The question is, if we start centering one day out of the year on serving others for the benefit of our liberties and thanking him, do you think he will continue to bless us and actually bless us in our efforts of saving this Constitution? That's a question for both of you. Do you think the Lord will bless us in these things? If we actually serve him in thanking him for this Constitution, and then we go off and try to do good things, do you believe we will receive blessings from our efforts?
Absolutely.
I believe we absolutely will.
Okay. So here's the question. I believe we will too. The question I pose for you listening, prove us wrong. Do this. Take time. I know it's hard to change your direction, but take time and, you know, thank him for this Constitution and try to actually make him, you know, the focus of Thanksgiving, and then try to go out and, you know, help others start changing our course by actually recognizing and centering our lives and centering our government on the Constitution, holding people accountable to the Constitution and their oath. You do these things, and I'll bet you you're going to come back and be blessed. Now, I said this in this show, that this is what I do. I don't make money from this at all. And I can't tell you how blessed I am. And I'm not bragging. I am so humbled with the great nature of people and the awesome characters of people that I get a chance to work with. These are good people, folks. And I believe that as we all start walking down this road, it makes us better. And we will see America change as we improve our station and our situation with our government. Folks, the windows of heaven are only being held shut by us. As a matter of fact, the promise of Malachi, basically when he said, prove me wrong this day, that the windows of heaven will not be opened up as long as you give, you know, freely of your substance by sacrifice and tithes and so forth. And so, folks, you know, we can ask and we can say we need this, but if you're not doing it, then how can you expect the Lord to give you a blessing by not following his law? The plea goes again. I hope that this actually can become a national phenomenon. I pray that America takes this concept of celebrating and recognizing the Constitution and serving him, and by serving others on Thanksgiving and taking away the burdens of others in America, so that we can actually start restoring our government, start restoring liberty and so forth. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.